From our studios around the world, this is Eat Well, Travel Better, the Business of Food Travel podcast. Every month, we bring you the world's culinary tourism industry professionals and share with you strategies, tactics, and information that help make you a more effective leader, communicator, and professional in our culinary tourism industry. I'm your host, Eric Wolf. Thanks for listening. Welcome to episode 54. Today, we will be speaking with Anna Roche. A self-taught cook, Anna is a chef who expresses the seasons, her region, her character, and her femininity through her cooking. She is the chef and owner of Hisha Franco, a 2-Michelin-star restaurant located in Slovenia and one of the leading restaurants in the world. In 2017, she was awarded the World's Best Female Chef by Restaurant Magazine, and in 2021, her restaurant was awarded the 21st Best in the World by the 50 Best Restaurants list. In the same year, Anna ranked 7th in the Best Chef Awards list as the only woman in the top 10. Because of her work, Chef Anna Roche was named the Ambassador of Gastronomic Tourism at the United Nations World Tourism Organization. Anna, welcome to the Business of Food Travel podcast, and thank you for being on the show today. Anna, it is truly a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. And you have such an interesting background from when you were growing up being such an avid sports enthusiast and a great skier and going to college to study diplomacy and also some pretty demanding parents. Before we talk about how you rose to fame as a 2-star Michelin chef, could you explain to our readers a little bit more about your background and how you even got into cooking?
I'm born in a very remote valley, the Soča Valley, to particularly ambitious parents. My mother was a journalist for the biggest Slovenian newspaper. My father, a pneumologist and dermatologist, so a kind of the doctor of the valley. And me and my sister, we're just 1 year distance. We somehow grew up in a way that parents really wanted to grow up, being excellent students, dance, do sports. I was almost professional into skiing. But then when I finished high school, I would say the first crossroad happened because I wanted to study dance in Paris and I got injured. And finally, I needed to find a quick solution to what is little Anna gonna become. I never was dreaming of course, becoming a cook or a chef. So I decided to study diplomacy and everybody was happy with that. We have diplomats in the family. I studied in Italy. And after I graduated, that's the second crossroad, I met a guy that I knew since all my life because the valley is so small, Walter. They had this small restaurant in Slovenian countryside. Well, that was one of the big surprises of my life because instead of going to Brussels to take over the professional diplomatic career, I actually decided to stay and start working in hospitality because I was pretty madly in love. That's very typical woman, I would say. After a few years of working mostly in the service, helping out Walter's parents into managing the restaurant, which was very simple at the time, I got pregnant and then I somehow understood that the only way the place can start growing is if somebody with a strong philosophy takes over the kitchen. So this is, of course, a big disappointment for my parents who were dreaming of having a daughter, a famous diplomat somewhere around the world. And instead, she stays in the valley and closes herself to the kitchen. But this is exactly what has happened. My father didn't talk to me for like 6 months. My mother is still a little bit angry with me, maybe, but I thought that somebody needs to do it and that was me because that was the only way the place can also survive. And this is how in the remote 2022 in the summer, I went to the kitchen completely with no knowledge, like since I was so much into the sports as a kid, I never cooked with my parents or with my grandparents, which is so traditional for young girls. And I was also pregnant, but my biggest motivation was to make it, to survive. And this is how it all started.
And how long were you cooking in the kitchen while you were learning at the same time how to cook? How many years was that?
Well, I'm still learning. So it's going on since 2022. It means 2002, so exactly 20 years I'm celebrating or being in the kitchen, learning and cooking, which is beautiful because I say that at the day I will stop learning, I will stop cooking probably.
It's said that you are a self-taught cook, and to learn everything that you have in the kitchen and your style and your philosophy and all of that, and you've turned into a brand. You have a world-famous restaurant. You have 2 Michelin stars. You've got all these different projects going on as well in Slovenia. For a self-taught cook, that's a pretty phenomenal accomplishment.
Well, you know, the awards and the recognitions just simply came on the road. I still think that my focus is not an award. My focus is an absolutely amazing kitchen, which is representing an area, the farmer, and of course, the season, the nature, and especially myself. So Anna's kitchen is extremely personal, could not be more than that. In this moment, we are cooking the menu, which is called Reincarnation 2022. And people before starting eating get a little story about who is Anna, a little curious girl who is like grounded with her feet completely in her valley, but her head flies around the world, dreams about different places that she has seen because I'm a traveler since a child. So to be honest, yeah, could not be more personal than that at the end.
That's wonderful. How did Hisha Franco cope with the pandemic?
Slovenia had one of the longest lockdowns in the world, almost 4 months, the first lockdown, and then practically 8 months in a row, the second one, without having a chance to open, not even like for lunch or in a limited number of guests. So I had 2 things in my head. First is I cannot lose my people. I'm talking about 45 young, curious people who come around the world. They are completely loyal and dedicated to my work, to my dream. And the second one was that my partners need to survive, and that is the farmers, because the lockdown didn't only close the restaurants down, schools or kindergartens, but it also completely destroyed the food chain. And you realize it when you see your first partners, that is the farmers, throwing away like thousands of liters of milk, fresh cottage cheese, sour milk, tomatoes, because they have no one to sell it to. So we started a project that is so many win-win-win-win-win-win projects, because my team remained creative and we actually earned some money with it, and we saved farmers, plus we brought amazing Slovenian food to every Slovenian home. So we did creative workshops in my team. We analyzed the products that were remaining in the farms. We studied down super funky but very healthy recipes and how to use them. But of course, you know, Hisha Franco can cook for maximum 40 people, and this is not enough, since the restaurant was also closed. But our capacity was not enough to help farmers, not just with words. So we knocked on the doors of the industry, and we actually started teaching technologists our recipes without any shortcuts, with complete traceability of the food chain. And today we have on the market already more than 60 products. We are just opening the shop in the center of Ljubljana. 60 products that were super sold. Like, they are not cheap because we never negotiate with farmers, and the cottage cheese is the real cottage cheese. So I think in a little Slovenia of 2 million people, we sold something like more than 500,000 products in the first month. There is like a product that is a jar of tomato sauce that is made by the handicapped people, but it's a third class tomato that the farmer cannot sell. There is a cottage cheese gnocchi with roasted poppy seed and tarragon, for instance, that has burned out all the remaining cottage cheese in Slovenia, ricotta, so much that we had to limit the production of gnocchi. And I say that this story connected the team even more together. I financially helped the team with it, because whatever we earned out of it, I was sharing in the team, so the team could financially also survive the COVID. We saved farmers from the remaining product, But on the other side, we brought to every Slovenian home like amazing Slovenian food from the farms. And a lot of young mothers actually wrote me saying, "You saved my life. Like sometimes I don't have time to cook, but when I buy in a supermarket, I always get this food. When you turn around, it looks beautiful, but then actually there is nothing really positive inside. But today you buy, I don't know, Anna's pasta filled with a mountain cottage cheese, candied tomato and mint, and you know exactly that this is really the cottage cheese. And you don't need to complicate your life so much anymore." When we restarted working, to be honest, I said to myself, you know, every bad thing is there for a reason. I suffered the lockdown a lot, especially the social solitude. But on the other side, for people who think it can give them the opportunity to develop things. So tomorrow is the official opening of our first Tush and Anna Roche shop. Tush is the supermarket chain which helps me delivering these products, and they are selling them. But we are for the first time opening a small boutique with this product. Plus we are adding the best Slovenian honeys, the best Slovenian marmalades made at home. We do a bank of cheeses, a bank of Slovenian natural wines, charcuterie. So the COVID also brought maybe some positive. No, COVID not, but the lockdown, yes.
You're making me hungry with all of those wonderful sounding honeys and marmalades and pastas. I can't wait to come try them all. How would you say that you are running your business differently now in 2022 than you did in 2019, 3 years ago, because of the pandemic? What's changed for you in the business?
I was the one who was always saying in interviews, I don't want to change. I want the hospitality, you know, to be still the one to make people happy and to make the world a better place, because at the table, we should never fight. We should always be happy. And I said that I believe that people will go back to the table, and I was completely right. Like this season 2022 looks like blossoming, like everybody's back. But there is a big but. The gastronomy has remained without hands. The reason is that if you lock down the society for 2 years, especially in the sector that needs creativity, needs work, young people, they of course work for money, but they absolutely and first of all work to realize themselves. So in the 2 years of the lockdown, the world gastronomy has lost young, ambitious people because they changed the work. Nobody can wait such a long time. So I would say that we are focusing very, very difficult times, and it is toxic. A lot of restaurants didn't reopen after the pandemic. A lot of hotels didn't open after the pandemic, but absolutely everyone is saying, I just can't find good people to work, knowledgeable people to work, because they work somewhere else today. And that is not somewhere else in gastronomy, but just in another sector. I am lucky because I was intelligent enough with this project with the farmers. I actually kept my people motivated. I kept my people working, using their brain. So most of them are still with me. Like there is always like a change of 20% of the team, of course, every year, but it didn't change. Actually, some people came back, some tried to have more experience in Copenhagen, and all three of them actually got back to Hisha, and I was really proud about that. But there is this fear, of course, that we cannot say, you know, I'm a great chef and I have a great restaurant just because I'm super creative and I have an amazing team, because maybe you don't have your team.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the World Food Travel Association's Culinary Capitals Program. Did you know that 72% of travelers choose a destination based on its food and drink? Now is the perfect time for smaller, lesser-known destinations to get on the radar of the world's food lovers. But travelers can't find the next great food destination if they don't know anything about it. The Culinary Capitals Program helps put smaller destinations on the map and keeps them top of mind for food and beverage-loving travelers. Get in touch with us at help@worldfoodtravel.org and learn how your destination can become a culinary capital today. And you're also the ambassador for the UNWTO for gastronomy tourism. And before the show, we talked a little bit about a speech that you gave to the UN Assembly. Can you tell us about that? Because I think that that is a really interesting statement about who you are as a person and your vision for the industry.
Yeah, my focus was, of course, like in the importance of working locally, working seasonally, because this is the only future in the food business that will make us survive. But of course, I opened a problematic about gastronomy. And that is absolutely not a sustainable place to work. And it's not a sustainable place for the future. Why? Fine dining is an incredibly detailed work where you need a lot of attention, a lot of hands, you know, to make this a piece of art. But to make this a piece of art, you need a lot of hands. But even those, a lot of hands, like I have 20 people in the kitchen, need to work a lot more than sustainable number of hours, you know, to make this be a piece of art and to make not only a guest happy or a food critic happy, but, you know, to realize your dream about what a fine dining dish really is. That's a very precise work. But there are those, because I don't think today there is any restaurant in the world that can afford, you know, maybe double team, triple team to make all this work be done, because I mean, we should raise the prices incredibly a lot. Like if the menu today in Hisha Franco is €225 and we are 20 people in the kitchen who work, I would say minimum 14 hours per day, but it's usually more. We, of course, are close 2 days per week, but whenever I try to shorten the working hours, people just cheat on me and they still come to work before, because, of course, they want their work to be done. So I did a small calculation, understood that actually I would need more than double people, but that means charge more than double to make the place be sustainable. But when I charge double, of course, people will say, look at her, how can you pay for a meal? I don't know, 500, 600 euros per head. Now, my idea was, but of course, nobody has heard it, that the United Nations should somehow protect fine dining. Maybe in Italian, it's Patrimonio dell'Umanità. I don't know how we call it precisely in English, but to put it under UN protection so it doesn't disappear. More and more chefs are closing fine dining restaurants because they understand that we are producing toxic environments. I mean, who can work so many hours for his whole life? We make this profession become one generation, so only young people can do that. But when they're 30, what are they going to do next in their life? Because you cannot work 17, 18 hours per day when you are 50. That's what I'm realizing on my body today. Because and more chefs are opening rather bistros than fine dining restaurants, where the expectation and the work that is implemented in the dishes is, of course, easier, simpler, and that means less hours. But isn't it a pity to kill something so beautiful, which is fine dining? Sometimes people, when they eat in Hisha Franco, they say that, Jesus, this is like being in an art gallery. That's the beauty of fine dining. But if somebody's not going to do something, I think the new generations will just read in the books about it.
That would truly be sad, but you're right. It is a very hard task to be working so many hours in the kitchen. And I think also there's an extra demand on you as a Michelin star chef, or two Michelin stars. But you also were saying something about how there was another Michelin chef who was working so hard to get an extra half a point, and it was just too much stress, and he gave up. But I think your approach is a little different. You know, the stars have come to you, but you're not obsessed with it, I think, like some Michelin star chefs are. And I know that you're very grateful for it. But at the same time, you're just doing your thing, whereas other people are, it causes them the stress. So what would you say to chefs who are aspiring like that, who want to be truly, truly great?
Well, I honestly think that, first of all, I cook to realize a dream. Your dream shouldn't be an award, shouldn't be three Michelin star restaurant. Your dream should be a restaurant full of happy guests, but the restaurant should especially realize yourself. So follow your dream and do what you truly believe that will represent you. And then everything will happen automatically. But I think it's very wrong to say that in this year, Hisha Franco is going to completely change the concept, because we won the third star. And because if today the project we have valuable 2 stars for the 3 stars, I don't know, we have to include inside the foie gras and the caviar and I don't know, lobster and king crab. But I go against my philosophy. So what is right, what is wrong? I got from 0 directly 2 stars for exactly the work that I'm doing. If there is a small correction, which is not compromising your philosophy needed, of course, you have to do it. Like this year in Hisha Franco, and I'm not talking, I'm just giving us as an example. I'm absolutely not saying that I'm absolutely right. We did correction on the wine card. I invested into also classic wines, which are on the wine card. And if somebody wants to drink them, I understand that it is also correct. But the 2 pairings that are combining my menu are, of course, the philosophy of Hisha Franco, that is biodynamic organic wines that we are so famous for. I'm not ready to compromise my philosophy just because I want the 3rd star. And imagine that all those guests that are coming to you that are supporting your work all the time, and then bam, they see the king crab on Anna Roche's menu and they say, what has happened here? So not always the run for an award is going to be accepted well by people who has been supporting you on the whole way. Never forget who you are. Never forget your way. That is the most important thing. And then everything can happen. Of course, try to be as perfect as possible in what you're doing, but do not forget your origins. And that for Hisha Franco, for instance, is working with local ingredients that, yes, are poor, but if you technically work them, they can become the greatest ones.
I like that you stand firm in what you believe and you say, no, this is what we're doing. We're doing local and we're known for our organic and biodynamic wines. So we're going to keep those. And you really stand firm with that. And weren't you saying something about what you would say to a younger you about not being scared to say your opinion?
I was always scared a little bit to be myself. So I always thought that I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not beautiful enough. I'm not cooking well enough. I'm not filleting fish well enough. And then I'm looking at, and maybe I'm still learning to have greater self-confidence. But I believe that it is so important that you have your opinion, that you stand behind your opinion, and you never forget your opinion. You can listen to the others, but you need to believe in what your soul or your brain is saying to you and be proud about that.
I agree 100%. And what would you say if a diner is in your restaurant and you come out, everyone likes to meet the chef, right? And you come out and you say, well, how was it? And they say, oh, it was lovely. How would you feel about that?
Well, lovely is one of those words that I hate most because they are hanging somewhere in the air and they are just an answer to fill a gap of a silence or of the truth. I honestly think that when you go to a fine dining restaurant or to a restaurant like Hisha Franco is, you need to have a stronger opinion than lovely. You can say, I didn't like it, or you said it was amazing, or you say it was interesting, which I really love. It means that people will remember something forever. But I believe lovely is a diplomatic word for like, I had a good meal, but tomorrow I will brush my teeth and forget about it. So yeah, it's one of the words that make me ask myself, how have those people really understood my food? And probably they don't even know their feelings.
Exactly. It's almost like they didn't get the point of what you're trying to do and what your menu stands for and what your philosophy stands for. They're just numbers in the cash register. They're not active participants in your art.
Exactly.
So I believe that you have a quote that you're known for. What is that?
Well, there are 2 already, actually, and both are tattooed on my body. It's fun that I must not forget about some quotes. One is that after every rain, the comes out. And I truly believe I sign my books like that. My book is named Sun and Rain. And I really believe that after every rain, the sun comes out. And when you're really shit or in a bad situation, just keep on repeating this to yourself. And then you will see a ray of sunshine. But the other one, which goes more into the Daltana, is the one I actually tattooed recently on my ankle. It's maybe even stronger for how I feel today. And it is, the power is in you and not in others. When everything is going wrong, the biggest problem for me in my life, I'm talking about me, is not trusting people enough, because a lot of people have let me down. So when people let you down, it's very difficult to go over it, especially people you really depend on, because we depend on people, not only private life, but also at work. And there is where this quote, the power is in you and not in others, really somehow strongly comes out.
Your idea that the sun will come out, I agree with you. That's very true. And also that ties in with what you were saying earlier about the pandemic and the lockdowns. You know, the world has been through this horrible, horrible storm of 2 years, but the sun is coming out now.
Yeah, you see, not only that today is a sunny day, Fisher Franco is booked out for lunch and dinner. And if exactly 1 year ago, we didn't know what's going to happen next, because we were just reopening the restaurant, not knowing when they are going to lock us down again. And there was really a lot of cloud on our head. Today, the sun is really out.
That's a beautiful thought. And I think you get some of your inspiration from reading. I know that you love to read, but do you have much time to read these days?
Well, there is always time to read, you know. Years ago, I was capable of reading a book per day, and really a book per day. I was like eating books, but I was doing it during the night to relax after hard work and so on. Always found time for it. Always had books, like shelves of books in the bag, book in the traveling bag, 2 books for the 12-hour flight. But you need to be rested in your mind when you read, especially when you read very good literature. I have very tough period to be relaxed in my head. Recently is like in the last years, I really reduced the number of hours that per year I'm reading. Unfortunately, last night I actually read 8 pages, but at 3 a.m. I woke up because I was sleeping with my book on my chest, and the light was on, and I don't really remember what I read. But I'm a book addicted person. I'm actually writing myself the second book in this moment. I believe reading is something really beautiful.
I love to read too, but you do something that I have not yet done, which is reading in another language. And I really respect that. I speak a few languages also, but you know, your command of English is outstanding. I know that you speak probably Italian from the time you were in Italy as well.
Yeah, I speak English, French, Italian, Spanish, and then some German and Slovenian and Croatian.
That's amazing. And you're reading La Ombra del Viento in Spanish, is that right?
Sí, I'm reading La Sombra del Viento in Spanish, because when you are capable of, I think it is the most respectful and the most beautiful to read the book in its original language, because you get those beautiful details of the narrative that sometimes it is lost in translation.
That's very true. A lot of things get lost in translation, unfortunately. Well, speaking of languages and travel and translation, I'm sure you must have a favorite memory of food while traveling.
There is a lot. I mean, traveling is beautiful, especially about the food. And you know, there was one country that everybody thinks is the most beautiful country in the world, and I hated it because the food was so awful. I just hated it. But there is one food memory that is probably far my favorite, and that is the train ride in Madagascar. It's an old Swiss train from 19th century that is bringing locals and, of course, food supply from Fianarantsoa in central Madagascar to Manakara on the east coast. It's only 120 kilometers, but the train needs, I would say, from 20 to 30 hours, depending how many hours they stop on every station. And of course, it's very, very slow, and it breaks down every second day. It is the only connection in this area. There is no road. Actually, there is a kind of the exchange of goods on every station. So I don't know, on the first one they would download the water, but then bring on, I don't know, pineapples, but then those pineapples in the next stop are, some are downloaded, and then leeches come on and the lamps come on and some water goes down. So it's a kind of a life train. And since the stops are very long, this is a kind of a festivity of the village the moment that the train comes. So the whole village is around the train with children, girls, women selling incredible food. And I think we were eating for all the 24 hours we were traveling. We were sitting on wooden benches. And there was a French professor sitting behind us who lives in Réunion, so in the island which is very close to Madagascar, and he was doing this trip second time. There is no tourist. This is not a touristic train. It's for locals. I heard of it from some travelers. That's why we decided to do it. And then he said on on the first station, we were a little bit like scared, you know. I mean, A, you eat with hands. B, of course, you don't know. Is this going to kill you? I'm going to have diarrhea or whatever. And then he said, guys, if you are not going to enjoy the food on this trip, then you lost the essence of Madagascar. So we did it. And at the end, we couldn't eat anymore. We were filling our pockets with roasted corns. My children were like dancing. There was like one stop just before the end. We were super tired already. And it was early morning, and the clouds of the first monsoon of the year started coming. It was like a kind of darkish. And the professor, the French professor, which was sitting close to us, stood up and he opened the doors of the train. And there were like plenty of children there. And he started singing one of those songs that were very popular in this time. And all children knew it. And I was like, how do these children, without electricity, water, know this song? And they started dancing, and then my children started dancing with them. And they were sharing like lychees and bananas. And I was like, but look at this. My children were emptying pockets from what they were putting in the pockets from previous stations. And I thought like, wow, food is really bringing people together. And sometimes you should leave your prejudice about what is right, what is okay, behind to have an amazing experience.
That's a phenomenal story. My only memories of Madagascar were the lemurs and the mangoes, but your story wins hands down, Anna. That's a great story. And speaking of mangoes and the bananas and the lychees and the pineapples you were talking about, I understand that you are a big lover of fruit.
Yeah, I'm famous for never eating sweets. Like desserts, anything sweet, like I just don't. I go to the restaurants and I ask for, you wouldn't believe, cheese and fruits, because I'm addicted to fruits. I think I get more than enough sugar from the fruits. In this moment, we have this crazy moment of the cherry. I mean, cherries here are so good. I can eat 2 kilos of it, skip lunch and dinner, just live on the cherries in this moment. Then the peaches are coming, then the apricots are coming, then the plums are coming. And of course, the tomato, as like a king or the queen of fruits and vegetables, because when it grows on an arid land that doesn't have a lot of water, quality soil, it becomes sweeter than an apple. So when I was a kid, we would be actually picking in August tomatoes in Istria, and I was eating them just like that, just like an apple. No salt, because the soil is mineral enough. They were super sweet because of so much sun, and our hands were becoming green because of the juices, and they were smelling for days of the tomato. How about that? Isn't that the most beautiful food memory you can have?
That is a fantastic memory. I can't say that I have those same memories from childhood, because growing up in the middle of the United States where I grew up, we didn't have that kind of fresh produce. So I'm glad that you did, because you're able to share those memories and inspire other people as well with them. So last question for you, Anna. If this was the last day on earth, what meal would you want to eat?
Yeah, maybe an amazing pizza. Close your eyes, go to the streets of Napoli. The hanging clothes above you, everybody's screaming, everything is loud, but there is that smell of freshly baked pizza with those incredible tomatoes. Of course, there's a tomato game. and maybe the mozzarella around Vesuvio. And I think, like, is if you can say that the food can be sad or happy, well, that is an incredible happy food. And yeah, with some chili on the top, I like spicy food. I think I would kill for that.
That sounds wonderful. And any fresh basil?
Of course, a lot of fresh basil. Now I'm really hungry.
I am too. It sounds like a dinner date. I want to have pizza with you.
Well, welcome. There is a nice pizzeria. There is a very nice pizzeria in Ljubljana. Otherwise, I bring you to a friend of mine, Simone Padoan, who is a master of a dough. He makes different doughs and his pizza is just, wow, worth the trip.
You know, you're right. The dough does make a difference. In Portland, in the United States, where I'm from, there's a pizzeria called Pinky's. It's on North Interstate Avenue. And the ingredients are all local and all of that stuff. So the ingredients are very high quality. But the dough, she ferments the dough for 3 days. And mm-hmm. the difference, it just makes everything about the pizza so much more intense. And it's one of the best pizzas I've ever had.
I completely agree. You make me hungry. Should I come to Portland? No, but the truth is, you know, people say, and I'm not going to be judgy now, but with all these modern diets, I'm not talking about people who are sick, because here my nephew is a celiac. So, I mean, one thing is when you're sick, but the other thing, when you go on this crazy diet, not understanding that, you know, we need carbohydrates, and an amazing pizza, which is long fermented, which an amazing bread with a long fermentation. I mean, it keeps you light. The diets today should be more balanced than ever. We are somehow working less hardly, less physically. Our brain, which needs sugar, works a lot more than 100 years ago. So we should readapt by not avoiding food, but eating food that is processed in a different way as this actually incredible pizza that we were talking about from Portland, 3 days fermentation.
Well, Anna, you're an amazing woman. You've inspired me with wonderful stories of food from your region. I want to eat in your restaurant. I want to try the tomatoes from Istria and the cherries from Brda. And I'll obviously share a pizza with you as well. You have wonderful stories. I think the fact that you stand for what you believe in, you inspire others, you inspire our industry. And I'd just like to thank you for everything that you do.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. And I would say goodbye and welcome to Slovenia when the cherries are growing, where the peaches are growing, when we are picking the tomatoes, or harvesting the chestnut. Welcome.
And to try some of those wonderful Slovenian wines as well.
Ooh, that is dangerous. Then you never leave, you know. So
oh dear.
I think, there is also some interesting brandies to finish the meal.
Oh, goodness. Well, it sounds like Slovenia is my next holiday destination.
Or maybe life destination. You never know.
It's confirmed. Thank you again, Anna, for everything that you do.
You're welcome, and a big hug to everyone to state.
Thank you. That's it for this episode of the Eat Well, Travel Better podcast. This episode is brought to you by the World Food Travel Association and its Culinary Capitals program. Did you know that 72% of travelers choose a destination based on its food and drink? Now is the perfect time for smaller, lesser-known destinations to get on the radar of the world's food lovers, but travelers can't find the next great food destination if they don't know anything about it. The Culinary Capitals program helps put smaller destinations on the map and keeps them top of mind for food and beverage-loving travelers. Get in touch with us at help@worldfoodtravel.org and learn how your destination can become a Culinary Capital today. We'd like to hear from you regarding the podcast. We invite you to share your ideas, questions, and thoughts by emailing us at help@worldfoodtravel.org, or you can connect with us and comment about the episode on major social media platforms. Special thanks to our guest, Anna Roche, and our thanks to you for joining us. I'm Eric Wolf, wishing you a safe, happy, and productive month ahead.